Hello, this is David Franco and Teresa Dietze with a Practical Work on Self. Tonight we will go discuss Chapter 22, I Can Do Anything, and move into Chapter 23, Radiation of Pain.
Well, all of that made me a little nervous, your introduction. And caused me a slight amount of pain. So I found a joke on my desk, and in order to relieve this pain that I'm in, I thought I would read this joke rather than read an actual paper that I prepared on cleaning products. It was one or the other, and I've selected the joke instead.
I was going to suggest that maybe you had some cleaning products to use instead to quell your anxiety.
Well, I know. I had a tough choice. So anyway, as it turns out, a chicken and his friend, a pig, were walking along the road when they came upon a diner. In front of the diner was a sign promoting breakfast, and it said, ham and eggs. The pair stopped for a moment to look at the sign. The chicken said, that sounds good. What do you think? The pig replied, well, I don't know. For you, it's a contribution. For me, it's total commitment. That was actually a joke. Well, it was on a piece of paper, and it said joke on it. Can I read it again?
Sinhog said, heh. That's a good response. Heh. Sama says, ugh.
Well, I don't know, but for you it's a contribution, but for me it's total commitment. So anyway, in spite of that, in spite of being killed on stage here, we will go into Chapter 22. I can do anything.
A Sinsog said, I thought it was funny.
Good.
And Pathworld said, you would.
I see.
And Sama says, I was told once I was the pig, now I'm a vegetarian.
Well, you could, now you're a vegetarian. I see. Well, the chicken was obviously very blasé, and the pig was forced to take it a little more seriously. But enough of that. So, go ahead. Am I next, or are you next?
I can read the header from the chapter, which is short this time. Whereas I can do anything, the machine is a congenital bungler.
Okay, now, here's an interesting thing for me, and that we read through this chapter in total last time and actually discussed it because it's the short, I believe it may be the shortest chapter of the entire book, which makes it a candidate for my most favorite chapter. But I don't know if you took any time to work on the chapter or look at it, but there are some really interesting things that we should pay a little bit of attention to. And I've highlighted them in my book, which is falling apart. But anyway, if we recognize our present state of affairs, we must inevitably feel the urgency to work toward the awakening of the machine and toward our own transformation. Now, that's kind of a remarkable statement. And most of us don't come to a place in our life where we feel compelled to work. What is it that can you feel that point in yourself? Not that you have to do it because someone said it's good, or you have to do it because you kind of know it is important to do, but can you feel in yourself the vibrational force where you feel the urgency to work as a fresh impulse from within yourself? Can you get in touch with that at the moment? Can you sense it, and how do you so sense it?
Sinhog can.
Yes.
Sama can. I can, although sometimes I'm the pig and sometimes I'm the chicken.
Exactly.
Sinhog said a chill.
Yeah, okay.
Ginger Rogers, yes. Sama, it's like a surge. For me, it's kind of like a surge too, but there's a constriction for me. It's as if, well, the feeling that one would have, you know, right before a box canyon where the water has to narrow down and then it gets concentrated between those two rock walls and it speeds up. The feeling is sort of like that, where it's a constriction, but things are moving a little faster.
I realized some time ago that I didn't think I had a choice anymore in my life. I'm compelled one way or another, as well as I'm able, to follow the path. And there's nothing I can do any longer other than that. I have found only momentary ways to hide from it. And that doesn't necessarily mean that I do it well. I'm not saying that.
Did you hide from it well?
To do the path well or hide from it well. But more importantly, I'm not saying that I can do it well. But I am saying that I am compelled to follow it. There's nothing left, in a sense, that allows me to take an alternate path. And I'm okay with that. I'm often confused as to what to do, but the fact that I must do something is always on me. So do we feel the urgency to work? And it also, the other sense of it, there's like two sides of that, isn't there? One is we realize that we are locked in a sleeping machine, and we must escape from it. At some point, the other urgency that arises is the urgency to fulfill our destiny, in a sense, and to fulfill what we can become for, like, our rites of passage, our rites to holding this machine, and the fact that we have this opportunity. For this moment, we have an opportunity to click the whole of existence one teeny click further, and that's part of the urgency as well.
What do you mean by the whole of existence?
Well, sometimes I guess I get the feeling that, on the one hand, there's a feeling that I'm interested in my own transformation. But sometimes I get the feeling that I'm doing it for another reason, and it's like the whole of existence is moving toward or forward in a certain way for a reason. And so sometimes it falls into that reason.
So would you say that the exercise in work wish is related to that?
Yeah. We remember that work wish in that chapter, and I'm glad you're bringing it up because that's one of the chapters we'll be reviewing in a couple of weeks. But in that particular one, it says select a work wish, an artificial wish that is something that you can take on, in a sense. Well, that's taken on for me as well, in a certain way. But it kind of birthed within me. But over a long time. I mean, you know, I'm 60 years old. I'm not a spring chicken. Not something that I...
No, you're a spring pig.
It's nothing that I decided to do. It's dawned on me. And so I'm happy to wear that garment.
So just in case anybody missed that, the exercise in Work Wish has to do with making a small sacrifice or setting an intention and going into the solar plexus and saying, I make this sacrifice or I make this change for the benefit of all beings everywhere. And so I made my comment about Work Wish because in focusing our personal efforts for the benefit of all, we're acknowledging the reality that we're all one and we're all connected in a very real way. And when we shift, then the universe does go a click forward from the inner work that we do. It's a contribution that we make. Silverdale has a comment. When our non-phenomenal self becomes aware of itself as a relatively independent cosmic unit, that leads to an urgency to explore that further. The non-phenomenal self recognizes itself as separate and distinct from the historical personality. The awareness of I am as a non-phenomenal brings a new perspective to who and what our historical personality is, as well as its possibilities.
In the Judaic tradition, in the Old Testament, one of the names that, whatever you want to call it, that God gave itself is I am that I am. I am that I am, the pure being. So we crawl ahead in this chapter. But once we decide to work, we must accept everything that comes to us in the way of work. What does this mean? Once we have decided to work, we must accept everything that comes to us in the way of work.
Are you still listening to my thoughts?
How do you interpret that? How do you interpret that in particular?
David, I can make a comment on that.
Thank you.
I'll tell you how I interpret it. It's... you know, we were talking about urgency, and at times I have felt a sense of urgency. I have felt a greater summoning of destiny, and that has motivated me to work. But accepting everything that comes with the work at where I am right now has been difficult because it's, to me, a constant bombardment of issues designed to trigger my issues and trigger my machine, so I'll work. So I haven't really... I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, I was just... Isn't that a terrific gift? If you see the gift part of it, then you start on the path to freedom. This will tie in a lot to the next chapter. Okay? What you're saying right now, Diana.
Okay.
Diana, are you sure that the exact same things are not going on and the same level of pain, but you're aware of it instead of asleep to it?
Oh, T, you're absolutely correct. It's funny, not funny, but it's like I feel like I'm in so much more pain now. Even though I know I'm not, I'm actually more stable now than I've ever been. Before, I was numb to my internal process. So as much as I'm uncomfortable, it's been helpful. But you're absolutely correct with what you just said. I swear to God, I feel like I'm in more pain now, but I know that it's not. I know that I'm now confronting my internal issues and the pain that's been there all along.
So it might not be that the discomfort is, well, if the discomfort is designed to wake you up, then you're just making a more effective response to that.
That's right. Yeah, I mean, and that's what I've gained from PWS and, you know, our personal work is, you know, the courage to have a fuller experience and design a more appropriate and healthier response.
Most importantly, we must learn to make decisions rapidly. If we are offered a work task, it is vital that we accept the task immediately without hesitations. So given what you just said, Diana, or anybody else, how do you interpret that phrase?
To me, I can say it's either face the issue now or know you're guaranteed to have to face it again tomorrow or the day after and possibly with more intensity. To me, the more I prolong addressing an issue, the more it tends to resurface with greater intensity.
The universe may be trying to get your attention.
Yeah, that's a nice way of putting it.
So Silverdale said, once our non-phenomenal self acquires self-cognizance, then we struggle to make the perspective of our non-phenomenal self our center of gravity. Our work is to pacify the response of the historical personality to the multiplicity and diversity of life experience.
So, like Diana, a few weeks ago, you shared an incident. I can't remember what it was, but it was like in a parking lot or something. You saw a person. You were nervous. You couldn't face them. And later, you were able, you spoke to them. And in that kind of an environment, that event, when you first saw the person, that was a work task.
That's right.
That moment was an immediate work task that was given to you.
That's right.
And in a sense, like you were karmically placed in that moment of time with that individual to, as Silverdale is teaching us, showing us here, you had that moment to pacify the historical personality, the sleeping machine. That was you had that moment. Now, interestingly enough, you didn't take it. But you didn't abandon it either. And grabbed it later.
Yeah, and I was really unhappy, and I sort of felt, I told you I felt in a, sort of in a weakened state because I passed this opportunity, and I think that weakened state bothered me so much that it's like it forced me to come awake and seize the next opportunity.
So the work task that is provided to us, that of which we can immediately accept or not accept without hesitation, is whatever the next event that occurs for us.
Yes, when life is seen from the perspective of work, we develop a work habit, then that's true. But we need to perceive life in terms of the work possibilities for that to become true.
And this chapter is called I Can Do Anything. And the I is the essential self. And so we're in that, when we're in those shoes, we're in that place, then yes, it's possible to see the work task placed at our feet for our opportunity to work through our karma at that time.
Now, before we move on, I wasn't quite finished there with the comments, and Silverdale had added, after he said, our work is to pacify the response of historic personality to the multiplicity and diversity of the life experience, he added, and strive to experience the undifferentiated unity of all and everything, that is, the work effort of the non-phenomenal self. And...
Oh, I'm sorry, was there more?
There's comments from others. Would you like to respond to that one, or shall I finish a comment?
I wanted to respond to that one. Can you read the last phrase of what he said again, please?
And strive to experience the undifferentiated unity of all and everything, that is, the work effort of the non-phenomenal self.
So we plow ahead if we are looking at the external as... And we're looking to the external in a sense as, gosh, it's conspiring against me or for me. If you know it's conspiring or it's an external event, then you're not sitting in the place of, I am a true worker, and therefore the event, if you are a true worker, the event becomes a work opportunity. If you're in another place, that thing out there is bugging you, is bothering you. But go ahead with the other comments.
So then you feel maybe a victim instead of a participant.
That's right.
Sama said, move and do. Don't just talk about it, read about it, put it to use, do it, act. It's work, not a spectatorship.
Yeah. Yeah. It's not a spectator sport.
Exactly. And then Ginger Rogers said, events provide work opportunities because it's possible to wake up using whatever is happening as leverage to invoke presence into the present. And that's nicely put. I like that. Using whatever is possible to wake up, using whatever is happening as leverage to invoke the presence into the present. Silverdale said, I can do anything, that is, I can blend in a vibrationally harmonious way with whatever I think I'm perceiving. The historical personality will always be a congenitor bungler because of the kicked puppy syndrome.
Nice. Yeah. So when you are standing in the shoes of the mechanical sleeping machine, you're always a bungler because it is being done to you. It's not an event that is presented for your work. It is being done to you, and you bungle from the very premise of it. Nice.
So, Jenny, do you have any comments tonight? Jenny's muted, but I just thought I'd call her out a little bit since she's hiding, lurking.
Hi, Jenny.
Still lurking, I guess. We'll go on.
Okay. So if we move ahead a little bit, in this work, listen to this line up here. This is the next paragraph halfway through it. In this work, hesitation, suspicion, negativity, argument, fear, insecurity, sarcasm, smart-ass cynicism.
Yes, but.
So, yes, but all of those, look at that list. Those are the hurdles that the machine throws up as justifiable homicide against the waking state. Argument, fear, insecurity, sarcasm, suspicion. When those are there, they're signposts that something else is going on. It must be quite clear in our minds that if we refuse work, we are actually refusing help. We must understand that it is sleep that is our enemy, not those who prepare us for evolution. So when something is put in our path for our work, and we see it at that, it's not. That's an opportunity, sometimes a rare opportunity. And if the rare opportunity is there, gosh, do we not want to take that?
That is an excellent sentence. We must understand that it is sleep which is our enemy, not those who prepare us for evolution. Great sentence.
Yeah. It's a different way of looking at the world. Here we are, chapter 22, almost done with this book. And all of these tasks that we're maturing, all the tasks we've been going through are beginning to mature into the invitation to stand in a different place altogether in our work. Guillermo isn't here tonight.
Yes, he is.
Yes, I am here. I am listening. Good to hear.
Hello, Guillermo.
Hello.
That one was for you.
Sorry, repeat that again.
That last comment was for you.
Could you repeat it again, please, David?
I don't think I can.
Okay.
I forgot it.
That's good. But thank you. Thank you for the present.
Yeah, anybody else can repeat it? Okay, and then EJ gives us an opportunity here, and he says, here's a way to operate in this new world, in a sense, this new garden. Pretend that you have discovered some substance which we're going to call luckium, where whenever you carry this luckium in your pocket or as a charm or a chain around your neck, you feel absurdly, even stupidly optimistic about everything, estimating your abilities and willingness far beyond your ordinary limits. So consider that. Consider that going through your work day in that manner. While you carry this substance, luckium, around with you, you feel wonderful, very lucky. You have supreme confidence in yourself. And whenever anyone asks you to perform a task without considering once or even pausing for reflection, except in consideration of your actual organic safety, you immediately express abject glee, agreement, immediacy, and unquestionably to perform the task, regardless of any dislike you may have toward it. And we do that because it's a work task. You understand this is internal work that you can do right then. Yeah, you accept it. Yeah?
Yeah. And somehow it comes to my head, the words of Don Juan, that is the, when the birds of the freedom shows up at your door, you have to take it, otherwise it never comes back.
Nice.
Yeah, can I add a comment to that? I love hearing the whole concept because I think of myself as being more of an optimist at heart. But is anybody really surprised to find it in the book? Because it just seems to me like so much of what we've been hearing so far in all the chapters is much more doom and gloom, like this is going to be really tough. You're going to have to work so hard to be successful at this, and you're going to want to fall asleep. And I guess I'm just surprised to see it here.
Okay, this is a great question. So why do you think it's here? Let's help answer that question then. What's different now? Why now is this being offered to us in this manner? Where have we come to such that it's okay to, in a sense, be offered this technique?
Well, just because we've been working hard enough for 20 weeks or 21 weeks at the other stuff.
Others?
I don't mean to interrupt it, but I didn't quite get the message that you were saying. What was your question? I got that the work is hard.
Well, what I'm saying... go ahead.
No, go ahead. Yeah, I just want to clarify what was your puzzle.
Okay, well, my comment is that I see this whole... half of the chapter, all this optimistic stuff about, hey, pretend like you have a lucky substance in your pocket and call luckium, and hey, it's all, just pretend like everything in your day is going to go great. And I guess I was asking, you know, if other people are surprised, and David is asking, why do you think it's there? Why at this point is he saying, hey, pretend like you're really lucky.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Can I mention something to that?
Sure.
I must agree with you. Many times I am overwhelmed by the amount of work when I can peep, you know, through the keyhole, either reading or practicing. And I go beyond where I am, and I can see the amount of work that I have to do. It's overwhelming, really. But I have to come back myself, and I say the only thing I can do is just be present, not expecting where I'm going to be tomorrow, if I'm going to reach anything. It's just a vocation that I have to fulfill. That is the urgency that we were just talking, David, isn't it?
Yeah.
I think now, considering that I have that feeling that it's a huge work and it's not easy for myself, this new element that is being introduced now, it's a different angle, the lacuum article, this that we are talking about. It's just as I will do it, I'll say, okay, let's pretend that I have this thing that makes me feel lucky. I really don't know if I'm going to be any luckier or anything at all, but at least I am pretending. There's a change in my attitude. There's a new tool that I have at my disposal to try it if I am able to put it with the right attitude.
Okay.
So.
Pathworld said, but I am lucky. I said, ha. And Sama said, because we might not want to act, maybe because of the feeling, all the doom and gloom, we have to invoke this mood and joy for the work ourselves. It's a way to keep going despite whatever's happening around you. And
was there a question mark at the end of her comment?
Yes. And then Silverdale, evolutionary transformation is a marathon effort. That is, like the tortoise and the hare, slow and steady, patience, persistence, repetition wins the race.
The other reason that I suspect that we are given this opportunity, was that Leona, by the way, asking that question?
No, that was Jenny.
Jenny. Thank you, Jenny.
Sure.
I believe that what has occurred is we have a teeny little bit of the essential self is starting to become part of our life. We can distinguish it a little bit because it is now, because we have a little bit of a foothold there, now we can use it as a premise to work from. We've built up enough so there's a little something there. There's a long way to go. But nevertheless, we have a little bit of a foothold where doing that kind of a pretending, so to speak, is possible for us. If it had been introduced 10 chapters ago, it would have been too early.
So you see in some of the New Age circles now a tendency to try and skip all the other steps and then go right into that one. And it's very different when it could even make you be more asleep if you're repressing your issues and you don't have very much self-awareness and you're turning away from all the other parts of yourself and go into that, then that could be used as another way to stay asleep rather than another way to wake up. When you put it in the context of all the other exercises and working to awaken oneself through self-observation in all manner of different ways, then it becomes almost like adopting a whim. It becomes a different exercise that stretches us in a new way rather than just a hole to duck down.
All of that makes good sense to me. I think I'm just still surprised to find it here because it still seems like it's still so hard to stay awake. I guess I'm still just surprised to see this.
Yeah. Well, look at the next sentence here. Yeah, look at where we go to the next sentence. It says, or the next paragraph, you should cheerfully grin like a village idiot and reply, sure, I can do anything. Then it goes, just be sure when you say this that I, the essential self, is really speaking. Because while I can do anything, the machine is a congenital bungler. So if you get the sense, because if you're working with the portal exercise, or you're working with any of the exercises of sensing the waking state, then you have a sense of what it feels like to be in the waking state. That's where you say, I can do anything. It's when you're in that space. Sure, I can do anything. But you're saying the sure I can is coming when you're in that position. And we can get there.
Yes, but then what happens for me is the I will sign me up for something that the I can do, but then when the historical personality is running the body, then I've been signed up for that, and the historical personality may not be able to carry it out because it's a bungler.
Well, that's exactly right. That's why you put yourself in a position that I call it where you have to, quote-unquote, go beyond yourself. And, for instance, there might be somebody that, for them, giving a public talk would be that position, where they would be in a position that the only way they could do it is to, quote-unquote, go beyond themselves.
Well, you know, they say that of the top two fears, the first one is public speaking and the second one is death, which means that for quite a number of people, public speaking is a worse fear than death.
Oh, my God.
That's what the statistics that I've heard are.
I agree. I, myself, could not do public speaking.
Liar,
no
liar,
matter
pants
what.
On fire.
What you tried, what albatross you hang around my neck, I refuse to do public speaking.
You've done it already. Okay, now.
So that only leaves one more fear for me, right?
Well, there's others.
You're doing pretty good, David, I tell you.
They're just farther down on the list. I want to catch up the comments a little bit here. Silverdale, again, I've adopted for myself the paradigm that evolutionary transformation follows the grades of a standard school. That is, first grade, 1 year. Second grade, 1 year building on the first year. Third grade, 1 year building on the first 2 years. Sinhog, thank you, Silverdale. Silverdale, as we get up to the sixth, seventh, and eighth grade, we begin to experience luckium because our non-phenomenal self is, like any 10, 11, or 12-year-old, just scroll here, conscious of self.
Yeah.
And Sinhok said, Coyote said last night, he learned water polo before he learned how to swim.
There you go. Says it all. Are there more comments?
Oh, not really. You know.
Okay. I could say another joke.
Go ahead.
Something?
Hello? Yeah, as long as we get a promise from David that he'll tell the joke afterwards.
No, David, tell the joke. And
no, too late.
He's a slimy bugger, that one.
No, you know what I was going to say with Requiem? To me, I took it as EJ offering a little vote of confidence, just a little bit more energy to try to move through this work. It's like almost trying to trick myself to, you know, move forward when there are times I know I should do the work and I still hesitate. So I don't necessarily feel lucky stepping into the work. I feel lucky or satisfied or more complete once I've completed the task. So I just felt like this chapter was, EJ was offering a tool and offering some assistance to keep us moving. Because it is so hard. I still think the work is extremely hard.
Of course it is.
Extremely hard, yeah.
As I was going to wait till next chapter, but I'm going to bring in a quote from Spinoza right now.
Oh, just that's a joke?
I was going to say, where's the joke?
Just because of you, Diana. This is at the end of his seminal work called The Ethics, the end of Chapter 5 on human freedom. How would it be possible if salvation were ready to our hand and could without great labor be found, that it should be by almost all men neglected? And then he goes on, but all things excellent are as difficult as they are rare. Yeah, it's difficult, but it's worth the push, isn't it?
Absolutely.
Because you're getting the taste now of something that may not have been there, but it was that you were unaware of in the past, and that's where you're compelled to seek it. Cool stuff. So, how are we doing on that chapter?
I have one little question, and I this might take you a little further away than what you really want, but it has to do with the last sentence. And it's,
yes,
this insane optimism and amiable willingness, blah, 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 should make us soon very popular among our lazy friends. And I almost feel like he's being sarcastic there, because...
He is.
Okay, good. All right.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's like...
All right.
It's a form of sarcasm. It's just,
all right,
if you're
good,
sitting there doing your work in that way, and someone, one of your friends says, do this, do that, and you do it, and you say, sure, sure. They don't know what you're doing, and they don't understand that it's good work for you.
Yeah. Okay, good.
So, a young man once asked God how long a million years was to him. God replied, a million years to me is just like 1 second to you. Then the young man asked God what $1 million was to him, and God replied, $1 million to me is just like 1 penny to you. And the young man got his courage up and asked God, and I have one of your pennies. God smiled and says, sure, just a second.
Beautiful.
There's another joke, and in one of the spiritual communities that I've been in before, they asked, people were always asking for God realization. And so the joke goes, well, how do you tell a real follower from a newbie? And the answer is that the newbie wants God realization, and the seasoned follower just wants a day off.
That's right. Well, I think we're, shall we launch, push the boat ahead? And
okay, so let's launch into Chapter 23, Radiation of Pain. Sensations of pain and pleasure can be used as reminding factors. They can provide the force for the awakening of the machine.
So let's remember this phrase here, and it's an art of trade. This trade, reminding factors. And those are things that we carry around to remind us of our work. We need help in our work, and we need to be reminded of it continually. So how do we do that? We develop things that are reminding factors for us. So what is a reminding factor? And that's just something that helps us do our work as we go about our day. By our work, I'm not talking about our job. I'm talking about this form of work that we're discussing now, inner work, and how do we stay on track with it.
So a doorway might be a reminding factor.
If you have incorporated the doorway exercise as something, the second you approach a door, a bunch of bells will go off, and you remember that you're doing a particular kind of work at that moment. That's a reminding factor.
And a guilty craving might be a reminding factor.
Well,
if we use
look
work
at that.
Wish.
Let's look at how that works as we go through this chapter. And this is a very, once again, I want to point out where we are in our cycle of this particular book. We're at chapter 23. We're almost at the very end, and suddenly here comes this chapter from EJ. Pain and discomfort can be used as an exercise. First, we must lessen their intensity by extending them outward. Okay, and then he goes on. Slowly, using the attention and concentration of half the attention, radiate the pain outward into neighboring cells. As pain radiates outward, you will notice that the intensity of the sensation seems to dissolve slightly, like salt in water. Now, what is he implying here? What is EJ telling us? What's he instructing us about how pain, in a sense, interacts with the body?
The less concentrated it is, the less painful it is.
And even before that?
That pain can be an awakening factor.
Well, that pain has a locale within the body.
That's too obvious.
This thing that we call pain, it's somewhere. It's somewhere in our physical existence. It's in, you know, our stomach. It's in the back of our head. It's in our right shoulder.
And the same is true with emotional pain. It has a location in the body.
And in this narrow context, or the context that we're going to be dealing with, and I'm going to have Spinoza help us on this too, it is specifically emotional pain that is somewhere in the body. So slowly, using the attention and concentration, half the attention, radiate the pain outward. Now, can you recall a pain that you had today or that you are having right now or that you had 10 minutes ago and maybe sense that it in fact did have a locale within your body? If you can make that real for yourself.
David, the only thing I so far I'm not getting, what is radiated outwardly? What would be in practicality that?
Okay, let's say that you feel a pain and it's right in the middle of your chest.
All right.
Maybe it's some form of a tension. Now, rather than continuing to react, on the next paragraph he says, if you had no additional salt, so if you don't give it more fire, but you just notice that a pain is there.
Mm-hmm.
Your attention then, you place your attention, and think of this in exact terms in a certain way. You place your attention on that locale where the pain is.
Mm-hmm.
So now something different is at work, right? You're not reacting to the pain. You're not feeding the pain. You're not complaining about it. You're just noticing it. And then, in a sense, you place your attention and you, in a sense, you allow it to move outward. You just kind of move it with your attention in a certain way. And it says that the intensity of the sensation seems to dissolve. If you add no additional salt, you can radiate pain throughout the machine without causing an imbalance elsewhere as a result. Even slight discomfort, such as an itching sensation, can be radiated this way, providing the force for awakening of the machine. Hmm. Now, has anybody ever done sitting meditation?
Yeah.
You're sitting on a zabuton, and you're there for like longer, even longer than like 10 minutes. What's one of the things that happens when you're doing something like that?
You get all kinds of weird pains.
Well, I mean, it's like it's legend within beginning meditators. Your knees start to throb. They start to want to revolt. And one of the techniques that some of the teachers give in that event is you. Rather than recognize it as, oh, that hurts, you place your attention on what's going on, the sensation of what's going on, and you move that sensation. You dilute it in a certain way.
So it's the opposite of dissociation.
Yeah, good. Say more about that. That's excellent.
The kind of conditioned societal reflex when we experience pain is to go away from the pain by numbing ourselves or going into the mind or dissociating or pulling away or in some way trying to make it stop. And in this technique, you're doing exactly the opposite. You're bringing the awareness and attention into it rather than away from it.
So immediately we're doing something different than what the sleeping machine is used to doing. Because the sleeping machine wants to run away from it. Yeah? It wants to get away from it.
Just make it stop.
Yeah, make it stop. Interesting concept, right?
And it's interesting that the more we do that, especially in emotional situations or even relational situations, we put ourselves in a position where we're unable to manage the situation effectively in a way where we could make a real change in it because we're not present. We're not showing up anymore, and we're disabling ourselves that way.
Very good, because we're creating and emphasizing a habit of sleep rather than attempting to create something that can be a new habit
Yes, and
of
this is
addressing.
one reason why we repeat the same things over and over and over. Even if we make a mistake, if we make that mistake with full presence and we learn from it, then we move past it. There's one spiritual teacher, Meher Baba, used to say, if you make a mistake, make it wholeheartedly. Because if you make a wholehearted mistake, then you learn and you grow through it and you don't make that mistake again. But if you do it kind of half-heartedly and you're not really present, you'll repeat it.
Sure. And we go to the next paragraph, which supports what you're saying. And EJ says, in the past, when these small organic pains occurring automatically in the machine had no purpose for our work to awaken the machine, we wished at all costs to be rid of them. I'm going to read that again. In the past, when these small organic pains occurring automatically in the machine, when they had no purpose for our work to awaken the machine, we wished at all costs to get rid of them. So if they're just pain and that's all there is to it, of course we want to get away from it, right? Avoid pain at all costs. As Charlie Brown says, the reason I don't like pain is because it hurts. Makes sense. So get away from it. Now, perhaps you can see how small, relatively unimportant pains can help you in your work by providing your attention with a specific field, listen here, of gravitational attention. Right?
So one of the important things about the work, to reference the conversation in the last chapter, is that the work in creating this center of gravity by bringing attention to things as trivial, perhaps as a small pain, those sensations take on meaning in the work, and the work makes things in life that might be boring or annoying that we may want to check out and go away from, it gives them meaning and purpose and value by creating this center of attention around the work. And life becomes more engaging, and that feeds the work and can make it easier to stay present.
Yes.
And this is all related to physical pain.
Well, no, it's not just physical pain. It's when you feel a pain that comes about for any reason, let's say an emotional pain that you might have, an anxiety. It creates a physic it will manifest somewhere in you physically.
So, but they will have to always, we will have to be translated into some kind of a physical thing.
Well, if you have an emotional reaction to something, which is what's called a negative emotion in this work, if you have that, it will have something in the body as its reflection point.
Guillermo, when you feel emotionally hurt, how can you tell?
Yeah, definitely. That it may be my heart, the palpitations of my heart, the anxiety, of course. It definitely translated some kind of movement or an action or something in my physical body.
Yeah.
my respiration, my breathing, my heart for sure. It's hard. Some situations I have felt them hard to describe physically what was going on me, but it was. It was physically. There was a whole sensation in my body.
Okay. So what the author is inviting us to look at now is that these negative emotions do have an actual place within the body. They have an actual place within the body, and so when you have them, pay attention to where that pain is manifesting within your body. It will be somewhere.
David,
okay, so
you should be coming up on your tape here. Yeah, your tape changed.
Okay, we're going to break.